Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very senior corporate leader, Dr. Adil Malia from Mumbai, India. Adil, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. Very excited to be on your show.
Thank you. Adil is the CEO of the firm, a business management consultancy organization. He's been a senior corporate leader with Godrej, GE, Marks & Spencer, Coca-Cola, SR, and he's a business coach. And interestingly, he also plays the Mohan Veena. So Adil, let's speak first about human resources. You've been a senior HR leader for a long time. You know, when I started my work or my life and in the corporate world in 1979, HR was either the personnel manager or the industrial relations manager. Mm-hmm. Today, it has evolved into a very key role as the chief human resources officer. I'd love to get your perspective on how has the function changed and evolved.
All right. So number one, thank you very much, Ashutosh. As I said, very excited to be on your show and share with you some nuggets of my experiences and thoughts on it. But first of all, let me also tell you that I began my career as a human resources professional. But for years now, I have moved out of it and I'm into a business leadership role.
Yep, I know.
So I have realized the criticality of human resources much more after moving into the larger role rather than when I was performing only the HR role.
Correct.
So number one is always this constant question, Ashutosh, that is it an independent standalone function as we saw it in the good old days when people used to be, as I understand, even before me, my predecessors who were in the space began as, industrial relations manager and then became personnel manager and then became HR managers and whether then they were called OD managers and all of that. So whether over the period of time, is it only the nomenclature that changed or is it the contributions that really they made significantly change? And that is the critical question we want to talk about. Now, I have seen HR, even in this day, age and time, being run as an independent standalone function in certain organizations. If you go to any of the classical legacy organizations, even now you will see HR being run as an absolute service center, as a function which has a well-defined role, but is ending at the point where it is expected to serve the people in the role that it is expected out of them. And I have also seen classical multinational companies where I have worked, including Coca-Cola, GE, Marks & Spencer, and places like there, where it is so integrated. Now, what is the difference? And it is a fallacy to believe that unless it's an integrated role, it cannot deliver it cannot deliver its purpose.
Correct.
Now, if the purpose of the organization is only to create profits independently, then it can continue to be in a an independent service center role for all its service functions. But if the purpose of the organization is to create value, then that value cannot be created unless and until there is an integrated HR narrative, which is integrated with the business narrative. Unless and until there is this matrimony and integration of the two narratives, it will never be able to deliver value. You may generate profit without integration, but you will never generate value out of it. Right. To that extent, HR has taken the leapfrog into the different domains of business that it is expected to.
Fascinating. So, you know, for our viewers and listeners, Adil, it would be great if you can help us understand maybe with an example on how this narrative has been integrated. Or how it helps to integrate.
So let me give you an example of a classical hotel. All right. So it's an example.
Yeah.
So a hotel can run itself by a separate front office contracted out to someone else. It's classical housekeeping services contracted out to a housekeeping specialist services. It's room services offered to a catering company, which independent runs, and they all can deliver their value.
Correct.
So now what has happened is that the classical expectation of the business is to not say that give me those classical timekeeping services or give me those classical performance management systems and things like that. There is an integration of HR expectations in areas of business in what, and I have been, by the way, you might not know, I'm writing a book called The 9G Model of Leadership, all right, in which we are talking about the 9 domains in which leadership has to perform a role. And you will realize that none of these leadership roles in these 9 areas can be performed unless he is a people specialist.
Okay.
So gone are the days that you are looking at HR as a person separately supporting the CEO. Mm. This is the expectation of the role of a CEO, that he performs these 9 areas. And well, if he is not able to perform, bad luck to him, but it is a critical value creating resource. And therefore, the CEO has to perform these 9 roles, which are critical HR roles.
Correct.
If you are interested, I could tell you what are those 9 roles.
Why don't
or
you?
I could take it later on.
So it's
a very classical model called the 9G model that I'm working on, all right, which talks about the 9 elements of people leadership that a business leader or a CEO of an organization needs to have delivered to him, whether through HR guy or through himself or whichever way he wants. Mm. Number 1 is get. Number 2 is give.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3 is grow.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4 is guard.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5 is guide.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6 is govern. Number 7 is granulate. Why granulate? Because people no longer want general services. They want granulated bespoke services. So
absolutely.
Granulate, germinate. Because you want to succeed over a period of time, so you need to germinate. You need to galvanize.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the 9. Galvanize, because like the experiences we are now having, when there was a lockdown and people demotivation, people depressions, people feeling uncomfortable. How does the leader successfully galvanize the team to rise above the challenges of depression and other setbacks and adversity and come up? That is a role. Now, these are 9 roles. Classically, you could call them HR department to do
Correct.
Those roles.
Mm-hmm.
Not possible. Therefore, these are 9 domains of people expectations from the business leadership, and those need to be performed. And therefore, the integration of these people expected roles into the business delivery roles is what the integration has come about.
Amazing. So, you know, as you were talking, I was reminded of when I joined ITC in 1979, Ajit Huxer's comment in those days used to be, people are our greatest assets. And for someone to speak about that, it took me a little while to figure out what he used to mean in those days. But what you're saying today is absolutely right and so true. And I wish you lots of success with your book on the 9G of people management. But moving on, Adil, tell me, technology has had an impact on virtually every aspect of a firm or of a company.
Thank you for saying company, because we differentiate company from the firm, which is the name of my company.
I know. I was just going to say that, you know, I think I used the name of your firm and then had to change quickly to the company. But
we are called the firm.
I know, the firm. But how is technology impacting the human resources function?
Sure. And in a very, very big way, I must tell you that. So, well, the world began in the world of in the space of business management from a paternalistic gut feel to what we have come to, data-based insights.
Correct.
So there was a time when the owner or the CEO used a tremendous amount of his experiences of managing people and would draw from his gut much more about what he believed, whether the programs of the company connecting with people would work or not work. So he would go by gut feel, unko ye de do, unko ek family day karwa do, unko ye karwa do. So he would go purely by the gut of his experiences, which are the prompts he would use to be able to deliver his people programs, to a time where we are using data-based insights, not only to understand and offer services, but to use them as predictive services.
Mm-hmm.
No longer am I interested in only doing a postmortem. Through big data analytics and data management and artificial intelligence, I want to do predictive analysis. Which kinds of people should I hire to be able to have a successful group of leaders in the organization?
Wow.
So I want to do data analytics of all the successful leaders who have worked in the organization, what led to their success, to develop a program and a model out of it, and then to be able to assess the future leaders who I'm about to hire, to be able to say that, do they match up with the competencies of the leaders who we have seen succeeding in our circle, in our company and in our culture? So those kind of predictive services which have come, and they have come because now there is integrated data-based insights which are available from big data analytics and artificial intelligence. All right. So from a no database to an absolute high-end hyper data integration is what has led to it. Insightful decisions, faster reach, accuracy, integrity of data, effective communications. And as I said, people are looking at not only galvanization, but they are looking at granularization. Now, how will I granularize? Because if I don't have data and if I don't have analytics, I will offer broad brush programs to everybody and sundry. But now no longer anyone is interested. If I have to use a reward system in an organization, I have to reward Ashutosh based on what Ashutosh's expectation of what he has an expectation from the company and what others' expectation, which may be two different things. They may be working on a common assignment. They may have delivered the common results. But the expectation of reward is very, very bespoke. Therefore, unless and until organizations have hyper data analysis and insights at an individual level, granularized to that individual level, you will not be able to motivate the future groups of people who are going to be working in the organization. So data and technology has amazingly changed from the time possibly in 79 when you joined ITC to whoever is the new person who is heading ITC at this point of time.
Well said. Well said. So one more question relating to HR and then we'll move into your new avatar as a coach. the pandemic has led to a lot of work from home. And there is a big challenge that I've been speaking to many HR leaders like you, or former HR leaders like you, who are trying to figure out how do they manage a large workforce that is completely distributed across a large geography. And second, a lot of leaders are saying that their ability to manage by walking around or that coffee cup conversation at the coffee machine, that has disappeared. How is this going to change the reality of the human resources function?
So number one is, let me tell you that I considered this pandemic period in terms of its impact much bigger, much wider than even the Second World War and the Industrial Revolution. Because, you know, for years, for the last 20 to 25 years, people have been on this threshold of everyone knows that we are going to be digitized. Everyone knew about artificial intelligence. Everyone knew that, you know, technology will take and fine, some were doing it, some were not doing it. This is one bullet shot, a silver bullet shot. What is called the classical tipping point that really changed the world from thinking about digitization to actually leapfrogging into digitization. 2 years ago, if I were to say Zoom, people would not know what Zoom was all about. They thought it was some video conferencing service or whatever, or not even that. And today, even the grandmother and the mosquito in your house is familiar with what the Zoom services are. Number one. Number two is that there is a huge amount of confusion that digitization and future is about work from home. Digitization is much more and beyond and not only limited to work from home. Work from home is a location, a locum from where you will operate. But the way the businesses are going to be changed, the business models are going to be changed, the tactics are going to be changed, the structures are going to be changed. All of that is what digitization is going to do. All right. Number one. Number two. Number three is, whilst the lockdown stopped traveling, there's nothing in the universe which after the pandemic period is over is going to stop you from moving around. All right. So it is not that the world has put a perpetual ban on traveling. At some point of time, maybe not now, maybe a few months down the line, these bans will be opened out. At that point of time, no one is stopping a leader from walking around and having coffee at whichever location his teams are operating from. But why are we still looking at the old tactics of leadership? Now, that tactic of leadership worked. You see, Ashutosh, I have a great problem. The world talks about change, but wants to fight the wars of tomorrow with weapons of yesterday.
Well said.
All right. So right was the time when the world was operating at a physical level more, digitization was happening. At that point of time, the industrial world found some connections and some engagement through walking around and walking around with coffee or having chai with the leader and coffee shows and all of that stuff. Now you could have all of that alongside with the virtual connection. So the challenge is, are we developing leaders of the future who are not going to use those past technologies and past methodologies and tactics, but are they innovative enough to be able to connect with people in this challenge of the business world?
Amazing.
All right. So you will have to find new solutions. Don't go back and tell me this will not. Of course, it will not work because the paradigm has shifted.
Well,
and when paradigm shifts, everything becomes zero.
Correct.
The peculiarity of paradigm shift is it zeroizes everything that was existing at a given point of time for you to now establish whether some of this you will take on, carry with you, most of it you will dump, and what are the new innovative ways in which you will connect. That is the criticality of leadership.
Well said, well said. So Adil, let's move on to your new avatar as a coach. You know, again, when I was growing up, in the corporate world, coaching or mentoring was done either by a family elder or by a senior colleague who took a liking to you.
Okay. If you were good enough to him.
Absolutely. If you like you. But
okay.
What has changed today that coaching has become so formalized and people are willing to pay for it?
So number one is, let me tell you the great fallacy which is currently operating because everyone and sundry appears to be a coach in this space that I'm
absolutely
working. All right. So anyone who you meet who is either out of a job or who is retiring or who doesn't know now what to do has suddenly labeled himself as a coach on a private visiting card that he has been. And that's not, well, you could be a coach and I have nothing against that. But this is where the fallacy is coming from. Most of the people who are in senior roles have got experiences of the past world. They have themselves never experienced the challenges of the new world that are
coming up. Yes.
I want to understand how have these so-called coaches of the past roles suddenly equipped themselves to be coaches to people in the new world and the new roles which are going to emerge. So therefore, you got to be equipped with coaching technologies, coaching tactics, maturity, wisdom, exposure, and so many other elements to be able to coach the new wave people, the new world people, the Gen Z people. So they come to you because they have a few expectations. They have not spent the time. The world is round. Experiences going around would be similar to the experiences that people have had. So how have they handled those changes? How have they handled challenges? What have they seen working? And more of it, the idea is helping the entrepreneur to broad-base the atom of his idea into a larger space of commercial exploitation for that. So they all have got a germ of an idea.
Correct.
They all want to know that that germ of an idea, if it has to be expanded to a larger universe, how do you go around? So they would like to understand from you what are the things they would require, what kind of network of relationships they need to develop. Do you have contacts somewhere where they could be brought in and introduced to be able? So the expectations are far more different. Otherwise, please understand that you have yourself in your previous avatar not handled any of the challenges that the entrepreneurs of today's world who are, you know, expect from you.
Yeah, number one.
They also expect from you whether what they have in mind, whether it will work when they scale up, whether there is a concept like design thinking that we tell them that, you know, you may bring in a change. That's a great idea. But how will you do a design thinking change to the value chain that is required to be able to support?
That
they all started believing that once they get the funding from angel investors and things like that, the biggest thing they need to do is invest in marketing. So they build brands, they build a big hoopla, they get a social media around the things that they are doing. And they believe that's the challenge that they have to undertake.
Right.
Now, most important is for the leadership to help them grow out of this to believe, yes, brand positioning is important. Yes, social media is critical, but to build an organization around the iota of a brilliant atom of an idea that you have got, to scale it up to a larger situation, what all are the things in the value chain you need to build up so that you're, say today, for example, what is happening at the Paytm level? Brilliant idea, superb experience with the IPO.
Correct.
With a 400 crore loss in the last financial year, and don't know how they are going to scale up to be able to expect or service the expectation of the investing crowd, which has invested 9 times to 10 times of the IPO size.
Well said.
Now, these are the challenges. That's where you require the coaches.
Well said. Well said. One more question relating to coaching. And, you know, I've often been asked this question that there are so many coaches, and you covered it so well in your response a few minutes back. How does a coachee evaluate whether they have got a good coach?
So Ashutosh, very meaningful question. How do you evaluate whether you've got the right doctor when you go to a doctor?
Okay. Do I get
What other things you see? You have to finally get well. But when you look out for a good doctor, what do you go? Where do you go? How do you search?
Go ahead. I'm listening to you.
So you need, number one is that you keep your eyes and ears open from people in your domain and space who are experienced people. You check out on internet and you check out on social media who are the good coaches or who are the people who are making some meaningfully significant contributions to corporations of the scales and size and ideas that you are working around with. So there is a lot of word of mouth references going around. So you've got to be alert to your need, all right? So they are not, and some of them are going to be advertised coaches. If you go to an advertised coaches, it is like buying an advertised product. It may service you. Fair and lovely does not necessarily make you fair and lovely on its application. It may not. All right, you will realize it after. So you have got to do this trial and error to be able to. So there is no formula for it. The formula is, number one, is he able to deliver to you the need you have? So you've got to be very clear. You see, it's become fashionable now for the entrepreneurs to say, I've got a coach. All right. As if to say, you know, now I've got a super backup. Now I can't fail. Blunder. All right. So the most important thing is, you yourself got to understand your internal need to say, what do I need coaching on? If you say, I need a coach. So you need a life coach. You need a thematic coach. You need a coaching in a certain space in which you are operating. You need to know that. Also, you know, Ashutosh, my greatest folly is, folly I see happening around this, that people have not been able to differentiate, and they are using it as if they were synonyms, between a mentor and a coach.
Correct.
All right, so they have not been able to differentiate. Should I give you an example to clarify what is the difference? So suppose, for example, in India being a cricket crazy country, if your father decided that he wanted to make you a great cricketer, all right, a great all-round cricketer, he will appoint a mentor, all right? And that mentor will observe you, that mentor will work with you, that mentor will talk to you on how you treat, how you think, how you behave, and then will see you playing the game and say, oh God, you know, you don't know how to spin the ball. So he will go to a coach who's a spinner and tell you, okay, fine, I'm going to put Ashutosh under you. Why don't you teach him spinning? Because in my scale of things, I think he needs to develop how to learn the skill of spinning the ball. After that, he will put you through a batting coach. After that, he could put you with a fielding coach.
Sure.
But he would continue to be the common element as a mentor who understands your mindset, who understands your attitudes, who understands your behavior, who understands that despite of the fact that you're a great batsman, if a bowler was to irritate you for 5 minutes by throwing ball here and there and everywhere around, you would be prone to making rash shots.
Well said.
All right.
And that's an amazing explanation. So Adil, I have time for one more question.
Sure.
And, you know, when I was reading about you, you know, you talk about your two secrets of success. Tell me about your two secrets.
I'm going to tell you three secrets. Is it okay? Because one secret I have not shared.
Okay. Three secrets.
So the number one secret of success is unleashing the magic of being a good person.
Okay.
Ashutosh, I believe after so many years of experience and even before that, that unless you are a good human being, you will not succeed as a good professional. You will not succeed in any of the roles.
Correct.
You will never be. A good person is a person who will become a good family person. He will become a good friend. He will become a good professional. He will
Correct.
Become a good teacher. He'll become good everybody.
Correct.
So number one is learn the magic of being a good person. That's very, very important. How and what are the elements that go into it? So number one is you're looking at values, and your value systems have to be right.
Yeah.
Your ability to empathize has to be right with the people you work with. Your integrity has to be high. You couldn't be having integrity which is in doubt. No one will make you successful. Your authenticity has to be there, and you have to create happiness.
Correct.
That's what makes you a good person. So if you really want to know the first magic of success, that's the first magic of success.
Okay.
The second magic of success is learning the trick of esoteric leadership.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there are two kinds of leadership. There are two kinds of elements that go into success. Number one is what is called the cogent factors, which are logical factors which go into making, you know, you could put them on a process map as critical to success, and you'll say, okay, all those a leader should know.
Correct.
You should know how to do it, all right?
Mm.
You should know the technology. You should know the content. You should have the whatever is required.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of that can be put into a process.
Mm.
But there is a magic of leadership.
Mm.
There is a magic and mystery around leadership.
Mm.
And you could make a person perform much beyond his capabilities.
Mm.
You could give an organization results much beyond what the resources invested are all about.
Mm.
If you knew and had the trick, and if you knew the trick and the art of leadership, that esoteric leadership, what inspires people, what is authenticity, what is about, how do you empathize with people?
Mm-hmm.
Those are esoteric. You can't put them into process maps.
Understand.
But they are so critical. They are so critical that unless you had that nest. So the difference is between effectiveness and efficiency.
Mm.
Efficiency are cogent elements.
Mm.
You could be done. But if you learn the art of esoteric leadership, which is art and not a science, and then become an effective leader, that's the most important element, because cogent leadership everyone has. And the third is very, very critical. You need to understand the phases of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships are critical in an age where your network is determined by your net worth. Your network determines your net worth.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the more and more positive relationships you build with more and more numbers of people, that is where the success lies. So three things: be a good person, build strong relationships, and learn the art of esoteric leadership, which is what will make for the success you're looking out for.
Fantastic. Adil, on that note, thank you so much. It's been such a privilege.
Pleasure is all mine.
To you. Thank you for talking to me about human resources and how it has evolved. Thank you for talking to me about coaching. And most importantly, thank you for sharing your three secrets of success. Thank you
so much. Pleasure is all mine.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.